When you post hunting photos on Instagram, they get censored. When you post on Go Wild, you get virtual fist bumps from fellow hunters. When you buy gear on Amazon, you gas up a billionaire spaceship. When you buy gear on Go Wild, we donate to a camp that teaches kids to hunt, fish, and shoot. See the difference? Go Wild is a free social community built by hunters for hunters. Join today at downloadgowild.com and I'll give you 10 bucks just for setting up your account. And you'll keep unlocking Go Wild rewards as you share content because guess what? We like hunting pictures. Join at downloadgowild.com or in the App Store.
The Southern Ground Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Spartan Forge. It's forged in combat and tailored for hunters. Spartan Forge stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting to deliver truly intuitive and science-based products that save the hunter time spent scouting, planning, and executing their hunts. You can start your free 14-day trial today by visiting spartanforge.ai, and you can use the code SOUTHERNGROUND, that's all lowercase, all one word, SOUTHERNGROUND at checkout, and that'll get you 25% off of your purchase. If you're wanting to know more about saddle hunting, well, check out tetherednation.com for all your saddle hunting needs. Tethered is for saddle hunters by saddle hunters, and they're redefining ultralight hunting. If you'd like to support the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, you can visit patreon.com/southernground hunting, or you can click on the link in the show notes of this podcast episode. We offer two different tiers for our patrons that offer a solid list of benefits. We'd love for you to join the Southern Ground Hunting community today. Again, that's patreon.com/southernground hunting. And now, let's get to the show.
Well, Matthew, I don't know about you, man, but you've actually gotten to sleep in this week a little bit, probably compared to...
A few mornings, yeah.
Yeah, compared to what you were doing last week. But I, on the other hand, have been up now for a lot of hours.
I got all my grinding done while you were doing the honeydews.
Yeah. Man, dude, you had a killer week last week. I'm excited to hear more about it.
We can break it down. It was my best week by far in the deer woods.
If y'all don't know Matthew Reeves, we had him on our creator series last winter. Me and Matt did a hunt together, a bonus buck hunt. Both of us were tagged out. And Matt got more tagged out on that hunt, and I just stayed regular tagged out. I stayed poor man tagged out, but you rich man tagged out and got that extra buck. Dude, what the heck, man? Like, last year was a really good year for you, and then you just come out swinging this year.
Well, you said it in some of your previous podcasts, you know, you have a successful year the last year and you wonder if you can repeat that again, and then you start to doubt yourself and doubt sinks in. And I'm not going to say doubt didn't sink in with me even this early in the season, but it sure did. You know, you lot of sits, don't see many deer, and then all of a sudden it just turns on for you, and it looks like it's just easy, but it's really not.
Yeah, everybody thinks it's easy. Everybody thinks you're going out there making it look easy, and it's like, no, you ain't seen the 5 days where I've been out here grinding straight, you know, and like, dude, I've been doing 2:30 wake ups because I don't want to be late right now. Like I have prepared my mind, prepared my heart, prepared my wife for zombie Parker. Like this is, we're in that time of the season, but you mentioned something, Matt, that I thought was interesting. You said this early in the season, And I have to keep reminding myself that it's this early in the season. And with social media and the fact that, I mean, me and you both, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of friends on Facebook who just added you because you showed up in recommended friends and they're in Kansas or Missouri or wherever. And for them, this is late in the season, you know. And so it's hard to remind yourself that we're in Alabama and our season hadn't really kicked in yet. Like, November has pretty much been everybody else's October. You know what I mean?
Right. And usually in seasons past, November is a dead month for me. I can usually count my early season, get a couple bow hunts, but when gun season kicks in, I usually just, you know, sit at the house, try to do some scouting, but nothing's on fire. But I kind of changed where I was hunting up this year to capitalize, you know, a little earlier in the season, or try to at least. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, you get this, I don't know, look that everybody else is killing deer except for you. And I mean, you see that on Alabama Deer Hunters page,
yeah.
Anywhere, you know, you feel like you're the one left out, but there's, you know, thousands of other people over here that haven't even seen a deer, much less kill one. So
yeah.
it's a pretty neat way to look at stuff and just can just mess with your head big time.
So you kill both of these bucks on public land. And one of the, I guess we should say that you killed two bucks last week. Great deer. Like, really good representations of Alabama whitetail deer. Like, really solid deer. One of them, if I'm not mistaken, is your personal best ever, right?
Yeah. The second buck I shot was my best buck ever, private, public land, anything. So that was awesome.
That's so cool. I've said it a lot, man, and I'm sure you're tired of hearing me saying it, but you're super consistent, dude. Like, You're literally one of my favorite people that post videos on YouTube, for a couple different reasons. But number one, you're extremely consistent. You kill deer like it's going out of style. We have similar mindsets when it comes to scenario based hunting. Like, we go out to kill big bucks, and most of the time we're gonna try. I mean, that's what we're out there to try to do. But if the scenario is right, we don't have a problem shooting a dink to make the memory, you know.
That's right. And I've followed you from your I guess you'd say growth as a hunter, you know, going from we would both shoot whatever we want to. Now you're just putting down dang slammers, you know, every year. But I kind of told myself that this year. I was like, look, I gotta hold back just a little bit. I mean, you can go back and look at some of my videos on my channel, and you know, there's some small bucks on there. But you know, not to say I'm not proud of them. I worked hard for them, and I continue to work hard for these bigger deer as well. Maybe just a little harder.
Everything's a progression, though. I mean, you got to progress. And the way I saw it for me was, you know, I still have scenarios, dude. I'm telling you right now. You can mark my words, Matt. My dad's coming into town tomorrow, and if we go out there and we just happen to be sitting together, and he shoots a spot, which he's going to be shooting whatever buck he sees. And I'd be pissed if he didn't. Like, I want him to shoot any buck. He lives in Texas where they have all these strict rules. You know, he doesn't get to shoot a lot of deer out there.
Yeah.
And he gets to come out here and do the public land thing, and he shoots whatever deer he sees. I want him to shoot, and so.
That's great.
If we're out there and we happen to be out there together and two like spikes come out, dude, I will waste a buck tag on a spike for that memory.
Go. That's great.
And it has nothing to do. It's not an ego thing. It's not like, oh, I gotta kill it. You know, I don't want to kill a spike, but for that memory, bro, I'd be down. Like, you there's scenarios like that, right?
You're exactly right. And I've hunted with some buddies, you know, and we're like, hey, if it's brown, it's down. You know, you hear that saying all the time, and it gets old. It can be pretty corny, but I don't know, when you're with your dad or a good friend, it's more about the adventure rather than the accomplishment of killing a big deer. Yeah, if you kill a big deer, it's icing on the cake, you know, but if you can just have a story and a memory to put with that person for the rest of your life, that's what really holds tight to me.
Yeah, I love it, man. But the other thing that I was going to say about you is that, you know, you're just consistent. Like, you're going out there and you're constantly working hard. You're creating excellent videos, genuine. I've said this before about my buddy Catman, you know, Jonathan. He doesn't do any kind of fancy editing or anything like that. He's just... The Catman that you see on his videos is the Catman that you meet in real life. You know, like, he's just the same. And I really appreciate people like that who are the same way. You know, they don't have to, they're not trying to be, you know, the next Steve Rinella or the next Bill Jordan. They're trying to be who they are, you know, and I love it. I love that stuff. But so another announcement, I guess. I finally killed an Alabama buck this morning. It's taken me long enough this season. I'm dang self-employed. Don't have a boss. I can work or hunt as much as I feel like going, and it has taken a long time to get an Alabama buck on the ground, but we finally got it done today.
He was a nice one from what I saw in the pictures you posted. Pretty awesome. Got a pretty cool story to go with it, too.
So yeah, we were talking about it earlier. We're good at taking pictures. Sometimes pictures make a deer look smaller than it is, and then sometimes, like, deer like this, like the deer that I killed, like, he's just big enough to look big in some pictures, and
yeah,
it was hard for me to...
The G2s go from 6 inches to, you know, 10 or 12, just crazy stuff.
Yeah, and you start using, like, wide-angle lenses and stuff like that, and it's like, it just makes him look huge, and he's not huge, but he's a fine deer for what I was trying to kill. But we were talking this morning, and I had already told you, like, hey, let's do a podcast this week. I want to talk about your week. But as we were talking this morning about, I was telling you my story about hunting this thermal hub, which is something that don't feel bad that you because you were kind of like, I don't even know what that really is. But as I watched one of your videos, it looked very much like a thermal hub type setup, which can be really good for this time of the season. But that you're not the only person. Like, literally every person I've told, they asked me the story. I say, you know, he was cruising this thermal hub. And they're like, I don't know what that is. What does that even mean? You know?
Mm-hmm. I've heard the term and I've tried to dissect it. Like I've told you, I can, with my job, I can read a map and know the topo map and how everything lies, saddles, benches, ridges, whatever. But when it comes to where this thermal hub is, you know, I've hunted them all my life, but didn't really know that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
So that was pretty neat to clarify that and, you know, pinpoint that a little more, be able to put a name with a, you know, an object.
I think a lot of people hear other people talk about it and they don't really know necessarily what it is. Why is a deer there? How should I hunt it? That's the number one thing I hear from people is, how do you even hunt a thermal hub? The people who do know what it is, because it sounds kind of dangerous.
And I think people overcomplicate it. They overexplain it to where you're like, well, heck, where is this little magical hole in the mountains?
The magical hole in the mountains.
It's pretty simple when you just cut dry and just say what it is.
Yeah. So here's everybody kind of knows what a hubcap is, right? You have on, think of a bicycle. You have your hub and you have the spokes that come out of it. Now think of those spokes as points coming down off of ridges. Now, what in a little bit of research, I have never hunted like a high thermal hub. And I can't really explain that one nearly as good. And it would basically be like where the top of the ridge is what splits off and goes a whole bunch of different directions. Which I guess I could see that working the same way. Out here, though, I typically don't find bucks on ridge tops unless they are just pushing a doe over them, or maybe they're bedding, you know, close to the top of a ridge or something like that. But I don't find many of them like cruising ridge tops. In Kentucky, it's the opposite. They're all over the ridge tops. But so for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to kind of talk about what I think would be the most valuable for hunters in the Southeast, which would be those low thermal hubs where you would have, think of almost like and I'm not talking to you, Matt. I'm talking to listeners. Just trying to set it up as good as I can. Think of like a bowl, right? Everybody's kind of seen a bowl in a map where you just have like a hole, pretty much. Now think of a bunch of different points dumping down into that bottom, right? So, or you have maybe four or five different ridges that are all converging into this one spot. and it creates, it doesn't necessarily, that wouldn't necessarily create a bowl, but it would create, in the bottom right there, you would have several different creek systems and drainages that go up. And that's kind of how I would describe a thermal hub the best way that I can. So
no, that was good.
So we know this, right? We know that this is elementary rut hunting, I would say, in hill country, that a lot of times bucks are going to cruise the top, let's just say the top third of a ridge, because that's where they, of the leeward side of a ridge, because the wind comes over the top of it, the thermals come up from the bottom, and this would be assuming that it's after the thermals start rising, so you get midday movement in these type of areas, you get that like 9 o'clock, 9:30 type movement in these type of areas, because that's when the thermals, the sun starts hitting that bottom, heating up the air, and it starts rising. And so the wind coming over the top and the thermals rising from the bottom create a tunnel, basically, that these deer can walk through, and they can scent check what's above them and what's below them. They can scent check for does or whatever. typically, I find, and this is where in your video, I kind of put it together that it looked like a thermal hub, because there was a scrape down in the bottom, right? That's kind of what you were hunting, that deer was going down to. Which
I was sitting in the bottom, so yeah.
Yep, and that's really a lot of times, man. As much as you don't want to, a lot of times that's where you have to sit, is down in that bottom. And rifle hunting, it's actually pretty great, because even if your wind does get to them, a lot of times you're able to get a shot off before they get to that where your thermals are rising, or falling. So you were hunting over this scrape that was down in the bottom. We know that in the dark, when the thermals are falling, that these deer are going to make all their nighttime sign down in the bottom of the thermal hubs. And this is something that I was thinking about today, thinking about your deer and thinking about my deer. Where I was at, there were rubs and scrapes all over this bottom. And I was thinking, well, yeah, because at night, they cruise at night too, you know, they cruise at night the same way as they cruise in the daytime. But when we see them in the daytime, the thermals are rising. So they're up on the top and they're cruising down low and making all that sign. So kind of explain the way that your spot where you killed these two big bucks. It was the same spot, right? Is the exact same spot.
Well, so the first buck was at the front of it, and then the biggest deer I was up towards the back on another ridge that was butting up to an old cutover. But what's funny is we talk about the sign and scrapes, and I tried to take a new perspective to scrapes this year to not hunt over them. I just told myself I was not going to hunt over them because I don't kill deer off scrapes. I don't have good luck with it.
So a lot of people say in the South, I actually talked to Jamie McKay, who is a pretty highly respected deer hunter around here. First time I ever talked to him on a podcast, I think it was the first podcast he'd ever done. And I said, so let me ask you this, Jamie, do you hunt over scrapes? He said, no. And I said, why? He said, well, if you hunt over as many scrapes and never killed a deer on one as I have, then you'd probably stop hunting them too.
You change it up.
Yeah.
And you know, as tempting as they are, you know a buck was there. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to hunt it. But just to go back, I map scouted this place, and I walked into it blind with a buddy of mine, and we were up on a little saddle, and I said, there's going to be a scrape down there on one of these ridges, flats. There's going to be a scrape somewhere down there. And sure enough, we went down there. There's a dogwood tree. Big old scrape. I mean, just had been done that morning. We went in a little later to be able to see. So we get done with the hunt, whatever. I was like, well, I'm going to put a camera on it. I had one on it, just old Tasco. Put it on there. Didn't think nothing about it. Just was going to leave it. Wasn't even going to come back in there that year. Was just going to learn it for next year. Well, I come back. I think I decided to go in there like two, 2 days later on the evening, I checked the camera, and there's 5 different bucks hitting this scrape in the daytime. I mean, every day there's been a buck at 9:30, 8:30, 10 hitting these scrapes, or this one scrape. So I told myself, well, you know, I need to be in here. So then that then turned into me going in that Wednesday morning. I think it was the coldest morning I've been able to hunt. I think it got down to 27. So I had pretty high confidence that one of those bucks that had been daylight was going to daylight again. And sure enough, a buck that I'd never had pictures of came down off the hill, and I was able to shoot him. You can see in the video. But what it was is there ended up being a hot doe in there at the time, and these bucks have just gone crazy. Every one of them was peeing scrapes. I mean, I had on video mode some really cool stuff. Had another big buck come through that first morning chasing does, coming off the ridge down in there. But the buck I shot came off the ridge, like you were said, just cruising to where he could get that scent with the wind and the thermals pulling to where it hit him wherever he was. He could know what was in there. And I was able to shoot him before he knew I was in there.
So when you you said he came, and it looks like in the video that he came pretty quickly down that hill. Had there already been a doe come through, or
there had? Well, I was the doe.
Okay.
I had sprayed a bunch of doe pee on my boots, and I that's the way I walked in. I walked in off the top of that hill and came down. Now there in the video you'll see a spike. He goes up, walks right under the scrape, and walks right up where that buck came from. So when I heard a deer come, and it was like right after that spike, I thought it was a spike again, but it wasn't. It was this buck. And all I saw was one side, and I said, that's good enough. if you have a spike on the other side, I'm still going to shoot you. But didn't have much time to make that decision.
So let me explain this to you too, or not explain anything to you, but just kind of tell you how my hunt went this morning. Very similar type thing. He was just going to cruise this hub and just go all the way around it. You could tell exactly what he was going to do. And actually in the video, like an hour before I shot the deer, I guess a backstory, I've hunted over the past like 6 years. I've probably hunted this spot 4 times, and I've never seen a single deer in this area. I sent you the picture, Matt, of the mud where I parked the kayak at, and you would think that there is no way that you could go into that area and not see 20 deer. If you saw the amount, I mean, it is tracks on top of tracks on top of tracks. It looks like hogs. I mean, it's the most I've ever seen at one time in one spot. And so it was really a burner spot. You know, the wind was supposed to kind of do a 180 degree turn, between like 6 and 9 this morning. So it was pretty much the worst timing ever for a big, huge wind shift. And so I was like, well, I don't want to go in any of my good areas because I don't want to burn, you know, I don't want to take a chance of educating anything. So I'll go into this spot. I always see tracks here. I don't ever see deer there, but I've also never hunted it deer in the rut. So I'll just go and try it. It's kind of a burner. And also the other thing with the thermal hub is, you're going to be kind of screwed on your wind no matter what when you hunt one of those. You're really taking a chance unless you just have a really, really strong wind. But in that case, I don't feel like the thermal hub works if the wind overpowers the thermals.
Correct.
And so, like literally an hour before I killed this deer, I said, okay, here's why I'm sitting here. Here's why I'm set up. All these points are coming down, dumping down into this one bottom, and I'm sitting right in the middle where they all come down. There's scrapes and rubs here, so I know these deer are using this as a thermal hub at nighttime because they're making all their sign right here. Up at the tops, similar to what your area is, and we can explain that here in just a minute. I'll let you run over that. Up at the top, though, there's a hard shift in vegetation, and there's like 3 different age pine thickets in there. And you can see it clearly from the map. Spartan Forge shows it really, really clearly. Because, I mean, all the the way Spartan Forge is, it's the wintertime imagery, the leaf off imagery, and so you can see all those different habitat types. So at the tops, on the points of this, it's a really steep hub too. On all the points, there's bluffs. So there's rock bluffs, and but on the furthest, I guess it'd be the furthest west point, that's more of a gradual slope coming down. And I said, I'm setting up looking directly at this one because I feel like a deer would come down off of that gradual slope, and then to cruise, he would turn and go underneath the bluff so that he can walk that underneath side of the bluff the whole way around this bowl, this hub. And not an hour later, a deer comes running right down there. But what I did, he was just going to cruise, and I would have probably still got a shot, but it would have been a little bit further away, and he was about to go into a thicker area, so it was going to be kind of an awkward shot. So I grunted one time, just really quick, and he stopped and hightailed it down to me. He was coming at me. And so I shot him, and that was that. But it worked out very similar. I think a lot of times what they do in these areas like this is they're going to just cruise it unless they smell something or hear something or see something of interest, right? Like, that's why they're there. They're there to find something, to find a doe, or to pick a fight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so in my case,
yep,
he was coming to try to pick a fight.
That's right. And that was my case with both my deer. If you looked at them after that, I mean, they had scars all over them. The last deer I killed, the biggest one, he broke his back leg fighting and had a broke off brow tine. And then both of them had white powder substance on their horns. I'd never seen anything like it, but from all I can see is it just from them, you know, locking up with another buck. It was pretty neat.
They do cocaine up there.
Never seen that before. Look, I was afraid I may need to get out of there pretty quick.
They found a cocaine stash somewhere. That's why they were running around like madmen all hours of the day. They were high on coke.
All of them kept coming. Kept telling all their friends.
Hey, there's a bag of coke over there. Y'all need to go snort some of that.
God.
But I hunted another one. I don't typically hunt these spots, if I'm being honest. Like, it's not ever something on the map that I really look at and say, hey, I'm going to go hunt this thermal hub. Like, I'm not scouting for those or anything like that. But a lot of times I end up finding one kind of on accident. The reason why I went to this area in the first place years ago was because of the hard transition lines up at the top of those ridges. And while that's great, to me, that tells me, yeah, there's probably going to be deer traveling around here. Because of the habitat diversity. But those hubs like that, I mean, I wasn't hunting on any type of hard edge like I talk about so much, you know. I'm not going to say it was open hardwoods, but it was fairly open. A few little thickets within that bowl, but for the most part, it was pretty wide open. And it seems like for where you were at, sets up real similar at the tops. There was some really good transitions of habitat.
Yeah, there, you know, it had its bit of pretty woods and then its thickets, you know, as well. Basically, it was surrounded by an entire thicket except for one side. And, you know, I told myself, you know, I guess maybe 5 years ago that I was not going to hunt pretty woods anymore, because that's where everybody set up. I tried to walk through ugly stuff to find it, but the first buck I pretty much set up in pretty woods, up next to the top transition. There's a pine thicket on the top and then natural regeneration to all my other sides. So it was a natural thicket for these deer to walk in, but it wasn't too thick. It was, you know, a lot of times I'll see these pine thickets that are just like dog hair thick, rabbit hunting. And some people say they think bucks will live in there. Some people just say there's just does there. But this one, it was like, it had some openings in it. And I just feel like a buck can, you know, he can kind of do, he can chase easier in there. He can do his deal. And that's what I came to find out on the second deer I shot. I went there the morning before. It was a high wind morning. I sat there and a buck grunted 75 yards in front of me in that thicket. I couldn't see him, but he was cruising in that thicket right there using that and the thermal hub as well, because I was sitting on a ridge. So he was just making a big loop all around me all morning, which then the next day I was like, well, I'm gonna get a little bit closer to the thicket. I ended up doing it, and that the big buck I shot came up from the bowl. He walked right down the middle of the bowl and then came up to the ridge, go into that thicket to either check for more does or go in there to bed. It could have been, you know, both for him, but it was pretty neat because I didn't expect him to come out from there, because I'm not used to hunting, you know, a thermal hub during the rut. You know, I tend to stay away from them, just kind of like you said, but it was neat to now add that tool to my bag.
What time did you shoot that buck, the second one?
I shot him at 7:15.
So, and what time did you shoot the first one?
9:30.
All right. So, let's talk about this, okay? And I thought you had told me you shot him at 7:15. At 7:15 in hill country and big tall woods like this, a lot of times at 7:15, the sun has not come up quite over, and so your thermals are still pulling down. And so you caught a buck. What it sounds to me like, and I'm not making, like, this is literally just for helping people understand how these work.
I know we're
early in the morning.
This gets weird.
Early in the morning, your thermals are going to be pulling, and so they're going to use the lower part. If a buck happens to be cruising through there early in the morning, he's still going to be down low like he would be at night, because thermals are still pulling. So he's still getting the advantage. It's just going to be down low, if that makes sense. And
right. Yep.
And so that's what you said. I didn't expect him to come from there. And it's a giant puzzle. Thermals to me are one of the funnest and most frustrating things involved in deer hunting. Like,
yeah,
without a doubt.
I look back on so many hunts now, and I'm like, well, why'd that deer at me? Well, because my thermals were dropping. You know, or you know, evening hunts. That's when I got busted the most, is because my thermals were dropping. I didn't know how to manage that. But back to that deer, with how we were talking, with, you know, you'll see in the video, the sun is not up. You know, it's still kind of, you know, hazy. But my thermals indeed are dropping, and I had a south wind, so it was hitting me the way I was facing. It was hitting me in the face. So that buck was using, you know, like you said, he was running that middle line between both, you know, wind check areas.
And you can set up in those type of places that are, like today, I was set up in a way where creeks are great, because water pulls thermals and it also pushes thermals the best, right? Once that water heats up, it starts pushing a little bit harder. And I was, from where this buck was at, I shot him at 9 o'clock, so thermals were already starting to rise. But the wind direction was in my face, and I was on the other side of a creek from where this buck was at. So even though the thermals were rising, the water was pushing, the creek was pushing me back up the opposite side, so behind me.
Right.
Because I was on I was in the bottom, but just the tiniest where it starts sloping up behind me. So the wind's in my face and the thermals are pulling in my face. Now, he was probably smelling from that creek on, the thermals were rising up that way, but it was almost creating like a split, right?
Yep,
from that
exactly.
Creek system. So there's the puzzle piece, right? When people talk about, well, how do you even set up in a thermal hub? And a lot of times in the hill country, you just can't, because wind is going to swirl.
It's a guess.
You're literally just guessing. But today we didn't have really high winds, so I didn't figure it was going to swirl too bad. But once that sun came out, I definitely felt it. I mean, and you can hear when the thermals start rising again. The woods just come alive. Birds start chirping more. squirrels start doing their barking more, and you can almost tell the exact moment that it happens, because the woods just erupt with noise all of a sudden. And a lot of times you'll catch those bucks doing just what your first buck did, where he was just cruising the top, smelled your doe and heat or whatever you had on your boots, and decided he wanted to go over and see what that was all about.
I could tell he was curious, you know, how he was, he put his head down, he stopped, smell, then go back to his regular thing. But they, you know, and then when you find a rutting deer, it's just different. Mm-hmm. They act different. The deer you will never see again, you know, are coming out of the woodworks. I mean, that the second bug I killed, he snort wheezed. I've never heard a deer snort wheeze in Alabama.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, I don't know. You don't find what we hear, the stories of rutting deer, the sweet November and all that. You know, ours is usually January, February, but where I was, you know, you can chase a rut in Alabama, whatever.
I noticed a big difference in hunting in Kentucky with the vocalizations of deer. Our buddy Hunter Lindsay, his first day in a tree in Kentucky, he had a pretty nice buck snort wheeze at a doe. And that was pretty cool, you know. And we go to Kentucky, and guys in our camp are like, "Oh my gosh, I just heard buck." We had a group text. People are like, "I heard a buck roar." It's like, "A buck's roar? I didn't even know they had a roar." Yeah. I didn't know they had a roarer.
I heard more grunts last week than I have probably my whole hunting career. I mean, they just hot, just bet, 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 you know, every step, you know. I hear stories, you know, of people at Terra Wildlife in Vicksburg, Mississippi. My dad goes there and he talks about how the bucks, when they're on a doe, they're grunting every step. You know, just hot on their heels.
It's pretty cool whenever you get to see deer act like deer. I've enjoyed it. You know, this past week for me, I've seen a bunch of deer, young bucks over here starting to chase pretty hard. And I've seen first day, Sunday morning, I saw 13. Monday morning, I saw, and this is when I say morning, I mean like from daylight till 12 o'clock or 1. Monday morning, I saw 10. Then yesterday morning, I saw 6. And then this morning I just saw 1, but he was doing the right thing. He was the right deer that I wanted to shoot, and he was doing what I wanted him to do.
One is all you need.
Yep, that's right. It's just interesting though. I think a lot of people probably are going to listen to this and kind of look back and say, "Oh, okay, you know, I get why that worked, or I get why maybe I got busted and my wind was supposed to be right." I will say. Right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think you've done a good job simplifying what the basics of a thermals, rising, dropping, sunrises, sunsets, and then just what it looks like on a map. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said, we get caught up trying to overthink a map or overthink a strategy. Just simplify it. Go hunting. Say, "Hey, this is what I think it is." And you stick to what you think it is until somebody tells you otherwise.
Sure, the best way I know how to simplify it is find those habitat diversities. We talked about that. I talked about it in last week's episode with Ben Harrison and Matt Powell. I talk about it all the time. Finding those hardline transitions. That's a good starting point, right? Because those are easy things to find on a map. But then you start putting together these terrain features and understanding how bucks. How does a buck use a saddle? How does a buck use a bench? How does that line up with these hard edges? You know, things like bluffs, like I talked about earlier. I just assumed because it makes sense. It's like common sense, right? Like if you and I were going to go for a walk on a mountain, we're probably not going to walk right on the edge of that bluff. We're probably going to try to get underneath the bluff so that we can walk a little bit easier and not fall down to our death off of that bluff wall.
That's right. Yep.
And deer are going to do the same thing. They don't want to walk the edge of a bluff like that if they don't have to. they're going to get down right underneath it, which it basically most of the time underneath a bluff makes a bench, right? There's a flat area right there, and so they can just kind of walk through that way. But there's so many different things that can line up, and a lot of it's common sense. The thing that's not, the thing that really is a little bit confusing is thermals. And I know it's trendy, and I don't know if you use this. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you don't, but I could be wrong. Do you drop milkweed?
I have redneck milkweed.
Okay. Cotton?
Oh, no, it's a plant that grows in a cutover that's, you'll see it early fall. It's really a white substance in the south. That, I mean, I've never found a milkweed plant before. I don't go up there, and I'm not going to buy it. But, yeah.
Hey, Tennessee, bro. Tennessee has got a lot of it.
A little bit. I gotta find it. But I like dropping it. I like seeing what's going on. I've learned a lot with it this year. I'm almost out of it, actually. I need to get some more. But, I use it.
So that's one thing that's really taught me a lot. And it's trendy, and people talk about it like it's, you know, best thing in deer hunting. But it really does help you visualize, like, what your thermals are doing. Like powder and that kind of stuff, you won't get the full visualization of what your wind is doing. And you can literally watch it like float to a water source and just hover above that water source. Or if your thermals are pulling down, like in the evening or early in the morning or a cloudy day, you'll watch it just go straight to that water and then just drop right in the water. If your thermals are rising, you'll see it. It'll go down with your wind, and then once it hits where the thermals are rising at, it'll just kind of just sit there for a minute, and then it may go the opposite direction from you. It's a cool illustration for people to be able to see what their scent is actually doing in there.
I mean, I used to think, you know, I had to have the wind blowing, you know, to blow my scent. Well, no, where does your scent go when the wind's not blowing? Well, it's doing whatever the thermals are doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty neat. You know, it could be dropping straight to your stand and just spreading out from there. It could be going every which way.
And even on, like, going back to thermal hubs, even on, like, a low to moderate wind, like miles per hour or whatever, wind strength. A lot of times those big ridges like that in the hills, like where we're hunting at, it's going to block a lot of that wind. So your thermals will still be at play. Only in these hubs, the only time I find that your thermals are not in play is when the wind is just insane, you know, really strong winds. And even though your thermals might not be in play, that wind is going to roll down into those hubs, and it's going to just swirl like crazy. And so, you know, it's still an advantage for a deer to be in those areas because they're still catching wind swirling, you know, all around. And yeah. I think a lot of times, too, they'll bed off of those points because of that. You know, they get thermals are playing. If the wind's strong, it just always offers an advantage for them. And for a gun hunter, dude, they're awesome. I am figuring this out too. You know, I'm talking about it like I've been hunting them for 20 years and I haven't, but I'm really trying to learn everything I can about them because they seem to be pretty productive right now this time of year.
Right. Yeah, I used to steer away from them because I used to just strictly bow hunt. So I mean, for them to run, you know, they got four or five ridges they could possibly run down. You know, that's hard to cover with a bow. I mean, it's possible, but
you know, my buddy Clayton Bond killed a big buck in Kentucky this year in a thermal hub with a bow. Yeah, yep, he sure did. And crazy. I think they can still work, but they're hard to hunt. You know, they're really tough to hunt with a bow, but you can definitely do it.
And I've had the deer skirt me at 80 yards and wish I had my gun during gun season, but I had my bow. But now I've got the rifle in my hands now most of the time during gun season.
It, I mean, That's what I was telling. I have a friend coming to hunt with me this weekend, and he's not from the South. And we were just kind of having a little conversation about gun hunting and versus bow hunting and all this stuff. I said, you know, it's like in Alabama, our gun season literally runs. You can hunt with a rifle in Alabama from, in some zones, November, the first weekend in November. So this weekend, this year, it was the 6th. I think last year it was November 1st. All the way through February the 10th, you can have a gun in your hand.
Long time.
And so guys out here, you know, people like you and I, we were just raised rifle hunting. Because that's what you did. You had so much time to rifle hunt. That's just what you did. If you wanted to get an extra month in, you picked up a bow and you'd hunt with a bow for a month. And then you'd, you know, once rifle season opened up, that was the real opening day, right? But guys, you know, in other states, like even like Kentucky, Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan, Pennsylvania, they just have like weeks of gun season. You know, it's not even a month most of the time. They got a couple weeks to gun hunt, and then it's back to bow. So if you want to hunt, you have to hunt with a bow. If you want to hunt the rut in most of these states, you have to do it with a bow. So that's how they're raised. You know, you're only a product of how you're raised. And so I think I love guys like Aaron Warbritton, Zach Farrenball, the guys from Hunting Public. They're a higher profile than creators like you and I, and they're making gun hunting great again. You know, they're highlighting truly what their vision is to represent the hunting public, the general population of deer hunters. And I love that they'll pick up a rifle, even though they're from Iowa and Missouri and those states like that. But when it's gun season, man, they will pick up a gun, and I love it because I think a lot of us, you can see it all over social media where guys will kill a deer with a rifle and they won't put the picture of the they won't put the rifle in the picture, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I used to be that guy. Oh, you killed it with that's easy. Killed it with a rifle, you know. Go shoot it with a bow. Well, not anymore.
No. It's fun. It's just fun.
It is. Just go out there and shoot something.
Yeah. And it's still hard. Like, let's be honest.
Oh.
It's still hard.
It is. Very hard.
I've been busting my butt the last 4 days, you know, straight since I started, you know, with my gun season. And, I mean, it's still hard to kill one with a rifle.
Yeah, it's not
easy.
You just can't go sit up, see 200 yards every which way and shoot a deer, you know.
No, dude. I don't even sight my gun in at 50 yards. Like, that's about where I'm at.
Shit. The two deer I shot, they were, I think, 70 yards was the furthest.
Yep.
Which was the first one.
I find that most deer that I shoot with a gun, I could have probably shot with a bow just because of the type of areas that I hunt. But
yep, that's the bonus buck last year where we went. He was at 10 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, that's how we hunt, you know, and I think that's where the deer live. In those tight quarters.
It's fun though because all of the unknowns, you know, when you shoot a deer with a bow, the hunt just started. You know, when you shoot him with your bow, unless you see him drop, there's all kinds of thoughts. Well, I hope I hit him good. Man, I hope whatever. You shoot him with a rifle and they drop right there and you can just start celebrating in the tree, man. There ain't nothing like it. It's fun.
Man, I have a different thought on that. I'm more confident shooting with my bow because I have my footage to look back on where my Luminoc hit him and I know where I hit him.
Yeah.
Well, the second buck I shot, I had no idea where I hit this deer. I shot at him twice. I didn't even know if I hit him. I was, you know, biggest buck I've ever shot. I'm stressed out. Did I kill the thing? And I don't know. I looked back at the footage. I couldn't tell where I hit him. But it ended up going in my favor. So,
yeah,
that's just the anticipation of getting down and going and finding them.
Yep, that's true. Well, man, I won't take up too much of your time. At this point, I've been up for 20, 21 hours. I'm tired. I'm going to sleep in tomorrow. Dad's coming into town. We're going to start Rutcation, and we're going to get back to it on Friday. But tomorrow is try to get some recharge.
Rest up and get ready for a full week with your dad.
Yep. And then the next 2 weeks are going to be full. They're going to be.
It keeps going. We got till February 10th.
I know. It kind of, like, I want to not work myself to death, but at the same time, like, there ain't nothing like being tagged out early. I love it.
I enjoyed it last year. I've got one deer I think I'm gonna chase, and I'm gonna try to get him on a bow before the season goes out, and maybe we can get back up together and go on a bonus buck hunt if we're fortunate enough to have a season like we did last year.
Well, here's the thing: we need to go ahead and do a bonus buck hunt, because even if we're not tagged out, we can still shoot. We can tag out on the bonus buck hunt.
Hey, doesn't go to your yearly tag, so
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, dude. Well, thanks for. Hey, wait. Before we get off of this, we've been talking. We've been referencing your videos quite a bit. Where can people watch your videos and stuff?
So you can find my videos on YouTube at Southern Pursuit. It's just spell it out. It's really easy to see. And then I've got Instagram, Facebook, Southern Pursuit as well. I usually post the links in my bios there. You can find that. So that's really all I got.
Like I said, guys, one of my favorite creators out there, genuine dude, calls his dad Diddy. I mean, he's country as cornbread, and going out there and getting things done. So thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. As always, a big shout out to all of our partners. That's Go Wild, Spartan Forge, Tethered, New Canoe, and Scree Gear. You can keep up with Southern Ground Hunting by following us on Facebook and Instagram, or you can subscribe to us on the YouTube channel. And make sure you check out southerngroundhunting.com to pick up some of our merch, hats, t-shirts, stickers, stuff like that. I truly hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you here again next week. Remember this: God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.